There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Hey, Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska name three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Good. I'm ready.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith with It's the Interview Series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks as always for making your way here, for checking out the episode. Please do hit that subscribe button so you can keep up with all the interviews that we put out. Three new interviews every single week, doing every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, just like this one. Great way to keep up with your favorite artists and discover the new ones. And of course, you can grab us anywhere you get your podcast from, including Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith with. Please do give the show a rating, leave a review as well, if you feel so inspired. Of course, we've had some great guests on lately, including Paul Feig from, he's directed so many things. He just recently directed Jackpot. You also know him from Bridesmaids, Freaks and Geeks. We had Lamb of God lead singer Randy Blythe, David Duchovny, Weird Al Yankovic, Samantha Morton. You can find her starring in The Serpent Queen. In fact, Minnie Driver, who's also in The Serpent Queen, was also recently here. We talked with the cast of Women in Blue, out now on Apple TV+. Adam Duritz of Counting Crows, Reggie Watts about his new stand-up special, Nevermind, Ryan Tedder of One Republic, Derek Whibley of Sum 41, Juliana Hadfield, and so many more. Just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, my guest, the artist Nikki. We'll be talking about her new record, her third album, Buzz. She's going to tell us about coming through the other side of an identity crisis to finding a version of herself more rooted in balance, as well as not relating to her younger self and creating an album that she wants to listen to. Nikki's also going to dig into her Joni Mitchell fandom before giving us the backstory on songs like Did You Like Her in the Morning and Too Much of a Good Thing, and why she ends the record with the words, No One Will Save You. It's all that and more as we dig into her third album, Buzz. It's Kyle Meredith with Nikki.
Hey, hey. Thanks so much for having me.
It is a pleasure to have you. It's a pleasure to meet you. And it has been a pleasure to listen to this brand new album, Buzz. There's something like it feels like you're a completely different artist this time around. Like they're the obvious breadcrumbs to the records that you had done in the past, but this feels like something different. Does it feel that different for you having been the one who did it?
That's a great question. I I mean, I think that I see a general through line and like an evolution. But yeah, I could totally see why this would feel really different. I mean, it is in a lot of ways, but yeah, I call this record like my last record's older, wiser sister.
I want to get into a little bit of the reasons why that might be too. But the impressive thing is looking back and realizing that you just finished the tour of that last record less than a year ago. What, maybe 10 yeah. months ago or so?
Yeah, literally like this. I went on tour, I think, last August. I started the victory lap of that tour. Yeah. So it hasn't even been a year.
Because that takes a lot of time to tour, to do the whole thing. That takes so much time. Were you riding on the road? Did you wait till you came off? Like, how do you flip it this quick from the end of that tour to the beginning of this cycle?
Yeah, well, you know, I started touring my last record in 2022, and then obviously it concluded last year. But I started writing this album sort of in 2022 on that first tour in North America, and that it just kind of naturally evolved into an album. But at the time, like, the first song I wrote for this record is track 10, Strong Girl. I mean, I didn't even know that it was going to turn into Buzz. But yeah, that's just kind of how it happened.
Well, as we read, you know, getting into these songs, I mean, you can't look past this thing, especially in the press release, where it says you had an identity crisis. And that's a big, heavy line.
Sure, to talk totally. About.
Yeah, and I can imagine it was much heavier to go through than me to read it, obviously. But, so if you don't mind, like what did that mean for you?
Yeah, you know, I say this often, but I really feel like nowadays I feel awake for the first time. And I don't know, I think, you know, I moved to the States from Indonesia. I was born and raised there. I moved here in 2017, and that was like the first big uproot of my life, kind of restarting from scratch. And then, you know, after that, I sort of just started doing this, like music and being an artist and touring and writing and all that stuff. And so I just feel like my life had been a constant series of this feeling of being uprooted. And then the pandemic happened, and then I was forced to sit down in my apartment for, you know, and that's not exclusive to me. Everybody went through that. And then I kind of just, that was the beginnings of sort of existentialism for me, and just sort of like, what am I doing? What brings me joy? What, you know, all that stuff. And I feel like this album was truly, even though it's my third one, technically, it really does feel like my first ever real attempt at kind of like doing it completely the way I want, if that makes sense. Just stepping into myself and into my art with conviction. That's what this album has been. So it's helped me kind of like, I don't know, forge some kind of identity, I guess. And yeah.
Well, who was that artist that you found, you know, when you got there?
I would say, I think it's just, it's not really an artist so much as, I mean, the artist is part of it, but I feel like it's more the person. And I feel like the person that I've discovered, I guess, is just someone that really values balance in life. And I think it's just sort of a really difficult, sweet spot to kind of find and stumble upon in this very fast-paced society and world and, you know, thing that we live in. And but, you know, when you do strike that sweet spot of balance, it just almost feels like, oh, life is worth living and everything feels manageable and worthwhile. You know what I mean? So yeah, I think this album was sort of just an album that kind of helped me arrive at a place of acceptance. You know, I feel like often we try to fight reality and we're just like, no, this can't be what it is. Like, I feel so much pain and it's so tough. But I feel like writing the entirety of Buzz has helped me arrive at this like place of, oh, you know, life can be many things all at once all the time. It's a blend of like, it sucks and it's great and it feels irresolute and uncertain all the time, and that's just life. And that's kind of what I try to touch on.
You can hear that too, because there are points in this album where you're like, this is the most heartbreaking album I've ever heard. But it's not, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth. It doesn't feel encompassingly as a heartbreak album, because you have these other moments where you, or I should say the narrator, the character, whatever, is falling in love or just feeling themselves or whatever it is, you know.
Right.
But then when you start it on that title track there, the show's about to start, the door is about to open.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that's purposefully put as your first track for a reason. But when did you know that this, to write it like that, I guess is what I'm saying, is it feels like you're setting up the album to be a story.
Right.
Is it a story? Is it a linear story?
That's, you know, I wouldn't say so. I don't think it's linear. It can be linear if you want. I'm definitely one of those. I'm an artist that says, hey, like, interpret it however it suits you. Because at the end of the day, I sort of see my work and my songs as just kind of like a vessel for how you want to inject your own experience into it. And yeah, for me personally, I would say it's not linear. It's kind of just piecemeal of the last 2 years of my life and my own story of, you know, and it's intentionally not linear to symbolize the fact that life is very messy. And yeah, it's just like this, and then it's this, and then it's that, and it's unpredictable. And yeah, that's kind of how I track listed it. It's sort of just piecemeal, basic.
And we'll be right back right after this.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always on the verge of death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan, additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Nikki.
So were you writing the songs after you sort of figured out yourself and the identity parts, or did the songs come after that?
I mean, I feel like it's a continuous thing. I don't know if I've really arrived at a destination or like at, you know, all of a sudden I know who I am. I think I have a better idea of who I am, or what I like and what I enjoy and what, you know, brings me fulfillment. But I think it's a journey, and I'm sure the answer will change in like a year and in 5 and in 10. So
that's when, like, the next album you say, no, this is my most personal album. And then
exactly.
The one after that you say, no, this is my most personal album.
Exactly.
It's interesting as a songwriter too, because in this moment, of course, this is you. And as we've seen, you know, like, the version of you from 2 albums ago, your first album, like, how much do you relate to her at this point?
Yeah, I mean, to answer your question, I have a lot of compassion and empathy and yeah, for her. But obviously, like, in terms of how much I relate to her, I mean, not a lot, because, you know, I was so young. I was 17 or 18, 19, and now I'm 25, and so much life has been lived since. And but yeah, I mean, I still hold those albums, you know, I still view them sweetly and fondly. But yeah, I mean, I'm constantly, I saw an interview with Joni Mitchell where she was like, I don't ever listen to my stuff, because I'm just constantly going to want to tinker and edit and say, oh, why did I do it that way? And I just had never related to anything more. I try to look back with fondness, and that's that.
I think most artists agree with you.
Yeah, right.
That I've gotten on that. I find it interesting and even fun when I hear an artist say, I created the music I wanted to listen to, and I love listening to my music.
Right.
For some reason, that's so rare. And I don't mean to say it's like right or wrong or whatever, you know, that's their own lane. But it's like, it's really interesting when they're like, yeah, I play my album all the time.
For sure. And you know what? Like, I would say Buzz is the first album where I have truly 110% felt that. And that was intentional, you know, like I I said to myself at the beginning of this, like, I want to make an album where, one, I'd be happy to tour for years and years. Like, it has to just be a collection of songs I'll be happy to play over and over and over again. I never get tired of it. And it would have to be an album that I would just be so happy to blast in the car all the time to myself and just listen to my own album and like it and be proud of it. And yeah, that was the sole kind of like idea that motivated this.
Joni, what's your go-to era for Joni?
Ooh, that's hard. I mean, maybe it's basic, but I do love the Blue Album. Like, it's just, I mean, A Case of You's on there, so you can't write a better song than that. I love Clouds as well, but I also honestly have, I mean, production-wise, Hijira is incredible. Just like, ugh. And Corn Spark obviously is like also. Anyway, sorry, I'm just like saying all the
I can go there. I like Coyote was what drew me that like I had Blue and I loved it. And then Coyote was the one that made me like huge. And lately because her 80s work sort of got looked over because of the production, but listening to songs like Number One and Coming from the Cold and just realizing that her like she didn't falter on her songwriting ever. Like there was no bad era for her songwriting, even if the production sounds dated. You know, it's
For sure.
crazy.
She's just art like embodied. She's my North Star, I think, for being unapologetic with what you have to say and in your art and just kind of doing it your way completely.
Some of those songs, by the way, and not to say they are not Joni-like, but just how like Colossal Loss and Do You Like Her in the Morning? Specifically, like these are world-destroying songs. Lyrically speaking. But like Morning is so heartbreaking, to overuse that word. What was it like recording that song? Do you have to have separation from the moment?
It's a good question. Did You Like Her in the Morning specifically is interesting because I had a, it was a, there were a few years actually in between. So I first wrote it in 2019 and then I shelved it and revisited it for this album. I was like, oh my God, there's that one song that I wrote that I loved. And it never really felt like it belonged anywhere until now. So at that, when I first wrote it in 2019, I remember just like, oh, you know what had happened? I had read The Artist's Way by Julia Cameron. And I had started, it was during a period of really severe, intense writer's block. And I did the thing where I would do the morning pages, where it's like 3 pages, stream of consciousness every morning. It's like a brain dump. And for the first like month, I was like, oh, it's not going anywhere. And then I literally, like one day, I just woke up and I wrote Did You Like Her in the Morning in like 20 minutes. And I was like, whoa, maybe this thing really does work. But yeah, in the moment, I felt really connected to it. At some points, I had to stop because I was like, I felt like I was re-triggering myself in some ways. But now, like again, I'm 25 and I look back, I was 20 when I wrote that. It's just fondness. And I actually, yeah, I just think sometimes I have these moments of, I can't believe I wrote that. I was a much better writer then than I am now. And yeah, I have those moments all the time where I just have a lot of respect for my past self and what they were, she was going through. And
I think that about that a lot. You hear that thing like, oh, when I was young, I was so much more dumb or stupid or whatever. When I look back on my own writing or interviews or whatever, I'm like, yeah, I think it was better.
Totally. I think that all the time where I'm like, have I regressed? Who's to say?
Can tell you haven't because, again, this record is easily your best record as far as I'm concerned. Those two songs, by the way, Colossal Loss with Do You Like Her in the Morning, my takeaway other than just them being so lyrically powerful is just to don't, pardon me, don't fuck with Nikki. They do feel like sister songs or a part of his same story, I guess is what it feels like. He's on the
Sure.
album together.
Totally.
Well, anyway, that's some of my more favorite parts. Do lyrics come easy for you outside of your writer's block moment?
I think it's a toss up, really. There are some songs that are, take a lot longer to kind of appear and form, and then There are some songs that I just spew out in like 20 minutes, like Did You Like Her in the Morning. But yeah, I do have a lyric bank where on my phone, it's my in my notes app, and it's just kind of like anytime I think of a line or something I really want to say in a song, I write it down. And I think Colossal Loss was actually one of those things, just because I loved how I said how it's like there's loss twice in that title, and it just kind of flowed off, or yeah, rolled off the tongue really nicely. And I'm like, that's kind of a fun lyric or like a fun title maybe. So yeah, I kind of stashed it, and then eventually when I had material, it became a song. So
It reminded me of I've got REM over my shoulder, and Michael Stipe was sort of famous for that. He and what he would do, like he would do what you're talking about. He had his book of lyrics, just phrases that sounded good, and he would make them into a song, but he wouldn't like clean them up to make them work together. And then the audience would be like, like just pouring over it, like this was and again, I say this like REM is my favorite band of all time,
right.
but to try to make meaning out of something that he sort of never intended for there
Right.
to be real meaning for, it's such an interesting relationship with the songwriter and the audience,
For sure, totally. Yeah. I stumble upon moments like that. I have stumbled upon moments like that throughout my career for sure, where I just I had the seeds for an idea and then kind of wrote the song to the title or whatever later. And then just kind of at the end of it being like, whoa, it's not at all what I expected when I first, like had this idea, and then I maybe like it better now. So yeah, that happens often.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Nikki.
I'm just looking at the track list here. Of course, Too Much of a Good Thing. God, that's so good. That
Hey.
all slinky, and we got Ethan Gruska helping you out, like producing, right?
Yep, he did. Yes. I love that song. It's my most like unapologetic kind of when we wrote it, I was like, I want to have a song that feels like The Chain by Fleetwood Mac, and but also with that kind of bravado of like Come Together by the Beatles, right? And I just want a track where you just have an iced latte in your hand, it's summer. And you're in like some urban landscape, and you're just walking down the street with your iced latte and your headphones, not a care in the world. And yeah, and then he kind of came up with that bass line for Too Much of a Good Thing, and then rest is history.
It's one of my favorites, right? I bet I've listened to it a dozen times this week, and I'm not even kidding about that.
Yeah. That means a
So,
lot.
yeah, that's a great one. And then, we get to the end of the record, and I'm wondering if I wrote these words down wrong, but the record ends with No One Will Save You. Is
Yeah.
that right? Yeah.
Yes.
That's a good line to end on.
Thanks.
Now, see, here we are. We're talking about that
Very
non-linear
optimistic.
thing. Yeah, we're talking about the non-linear thing, but this is still in the same way that Buzz and the show's about to start. Is there a reason why this is at the end?
Yeah, nothing can track 13. I, for a long time, kind of kept seesawing between it should be the opener or it should be the closer. But either way, it felt like the song that had a lot of impact, and to me at least, on sort of like a messaging perspective. But yeah, it ended up feeling better as the closer because of how irresolute it is. There's no answer in that song. And I feel like I was very conscious of that throughout writing this, where it's just like there are no answers sometimes, and you just have to make them up as you go. And Nothing Can is about that accepting that, life, even though life sucks and is full of suffering and pain a lot of the time, there are still these little moments in between of just pure joy and gratitude and fulfillment that make it all worthwhile, kind of thing. So, the chorus, both choruses starts off with a pretty tense chord progression. It's like the, I don't want to get into the weeds of, I don't know if you, but it's just like, it's like the two major into the three major into the four. And then that, to me, that has always felt like a very tense chord progression. And then those lines are like, you're all alone again. You look around your bedroom, you're all alone, whatever. But then it kind of goes to a much happier chord progression where you say, but even though you're alone, you're still gonna smile at a stranger. You're still gonna make weekend plans. You're still gonna get breakfast with the band on tour. And, you know, it's like life can still be great in those little moments. It's like, it's always yes and. So that, yeah, that was a really meaningful song for me. I felt like writing that song felt like therapy in and of itself.
I love the way it all came together. I love the way it's structured, you know, and it is because it still feels like a journey to me. You know, I loved going on it with you. Seriously, it's one of my favorite albums of the year, and I mean that too. So
wow, that's congratulations very nice. I really appreciate that. That means a lot. Thanks, yeah. Kyle.
Nikki, it was great talking to you. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure. It was awesome.
My thanks to Nikki. The new album is called Buzz. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Again, please do hit that subscribe button before you get out of here so you can keep up with all the interviews that I put out every single week, new and every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Three interviews a week at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org. Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from, you can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. Please do give the series a rating, leave a review as well while you're at it. And then after that, you can head over to WFPK.org. That's where I do a show Monday through Friday. It starts at 6 p.m. Eastern. In fact, you get 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music. There are bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. In fact, one of my most recent shows featured some classics and favorites from the Violent Femmes, Pearl Jam, Bjork, Jane's Addiction, Superdrag, Weezer, the Mighty Mighty Bosstones, Janet Jackson, The Breeders, L7, Scarlett Johansson, The Meredith's, Monsters of Folk, The White Stripes, Mavis Staples, and my interview with Kurtwood Smith. He played Red on That 70s Show, back now in season 2 of That 90s Show on Netflix. Again, just an example of what you can hear weeknights starting at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.